We're going to continue today looking at some of the great characters of Old Testament history. Today we're going to be looking at David, who is arguably one of the most well-known and probably the most beloved king of Israel. Now, unlike his predecessor Saul, who was a king after the heart and desire of the people, David is described as a man after God's own heart. He was a man that God chose to lead his people, particularly, I think, because of the kind of heart that David had, that he was the kind of man who was going to do the will of God and follow his Lord. Now, his story can be found within several books of the Old Testament. In fact, it starts in 1 Samuel chapter 16 and goes all the way through 1 Kings chapter 2 when we're told of his death and passing the reins of the kingdom over to his son Solomon. There's also a parallel account of some of the events in his life found in 1 Chronicles chapters 11 through 29. What's interesting to me is I've gone back and I've reread the history of David this past week is that there are parts of David's history with which we are very familiar. We remember his introduction as a youth, the youngest of eight brothers in the house of Jesse, when Samuel calls him in from the field tending the sheep and anoints him as the new king over Israel. We remember his meteoric rise to prominence, coming from tending sheep in his father's fields to defeating the giant Goliath on the battlefield, and how he quickly rose both in prominence and as a warrior, being promoted to being a commander of the armies of King Saul, and the fact that he skyrocketed in his popularity among the people of Israel. Remember, it was shortly after this that the people of Israel came up with this song where they said, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s." And he was a popular guy among the people. He was a hero. He was one that the people looked up to. Indeed, he was a fearless warrior and a mighty general and a great king. Even in his old age, we're going to read about an account later on where his son will rebel against him and try to take the kingdom away from him. And he is advised by some older, wiser men to say, don't go and try to do a sneak attack on your dad. Because even though he's old, he's a mighty warrior. He's a fierce man. You're not going to be able to defeat him. We've also heard about and are familiar with some of his failures, the most prominent that being his sin with Bathsheba, and then resulting in the murder of her husband Uriah the Hittite, who was, by the way, one of his mighty men of valor. And the fact that he stole Uriah's wife from him. And the punishment and the confrontation that he had with Nathan the prophet, where Nathan points out to him his sin and David repents, and then all of the negative consequences that result from that sin. But you know what's interesting to me as I think about David is that there are some other aspects of this great man of God with which we are not so familiar. For example, did you know that David was not only a shepherd and a mighty warrior and a great king, but that he was an accomplished psalmist? In fact, if you go through the book of Psalms, there's 150 psalms in the book of Psalms. And by my count, David wrote at least 73 of those 150 psalms. Almost half of the Jewish songbook was composed by this shepherd king. And as I've been rereading through the history of David's life this last week, there's been another aspect of David's character that has jumped out at me. Specifically, the way in which David typically responds to those who mistreat, abuse, or otherwise act as his enemies. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to spend a few minutes exploring some examples from the life of David and how he interacted with his enemies and the attitude that he demonstrated towards them and see what lessons we can learn from that ourselves. So we're going to be working through quite a bit of text today. We're not going to read all of it. In fact, some of the stories I may just tell you. Others, we may read sections of it from the scripture itself. But I want to give you a flavor and a sense for how David responded when he was being mistreated and abused. Now, the first and the most obvious illustration of this comes from his interaction with King Saul. Now, it's right after David had defeated Goliath and been promoted to this position of prominence within Saul's army. In fact, for a while, he was Saul's armor bearer. He went into battle with the king. And he also used to play the harp for the king when the king would be troubled by an evil spirit. And it's interesting, there's this account in 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 10 and 11, that as Saul is being troubled by this spirit and David is playing the harp there to soothe him, that Saul has the spear in his hand and he gets irritated with David and almost unprovoked hurls the spear at David in an attempt to kill him. And David has to run out of there. The text tells us that he escaped from his presence twice in this way. Now, it was shortly after this that Saul attempts to get rid of David in a more tactful way. Murder by proxy. He suggests to David, hey, David, why don't you become my son-in-law? I've got this daughter here. Why don't you marry her? And when he offers his eldest daughter, David initially says, no, I'm not worthy enough to be the king's son. And so Saul gets irritated and gives that daughter to somebody else. But then Saul realizes that his younger daughter, Michal, loves David. And he says, here's my opportunity. So again, he proposes to David, why don't you have my younger daughter, Michal? She can be your wife. All the while, Saul is planning to use his daughter as bait in order to get David killed. Verse 21 of 1 Samuel 18, it says, Saul thought, I'll give her to him that she may become a snare to him and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Now, the way that the hand of the Philistines was going to be against him was because it was customary in those days that when a young man took a bride, he would pay a dowry to his bride's father. And Saul is going to strike a very good bargain with David. I don't want an expensive dowry, he says. I don't want a lot of cattle. I don't want a lot of sheep. I don't want a lot of gold. All I want is for you to collect for me 100 foreskins of Philistine warriors. Pretty good deal, right? Well, let me tell you something. The only way you're getting a foreskin off of a Philistine warrior is if he's already dead, because he ain't going to give that up voluntarily. Saul's plan is that David, in his attempt to kill 100 Philistines and collect this dowry, is going to, in the process, be killed by the Philistines. Now, unfortunately, Saul's plan backfires on him. And David not only kills 100 Philistines, he actually kills 200 Philistines and brings 200 foreskins to Saul as payment for his bride. And as a result of this, Saul is even more frustrated and upset with David. And again, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 8 through 10. There was war again. David went out and fought with the Philistines and defeated them with great slaughter so that they fled before him. David is being a success everywhere he turns, and this is really grating on Saul. In verse 9, there was an evil spirit from the Lord on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing the harp with his hand, and Saul tried to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence so that he stuck the spear in the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. Now, the second time, Saul has hurled a spear at his faithful servant David in an effort to kill him and get rid of him. And that night, David goes home to his house with Michal, his wife, Saul's daughter. And she learns that Saul, her father, has set an ambush outside the house. That assassins are waiting for David to come out of the house in the morning that they're going to kill him. So she tells David, you've got to get out of the house tonight and run away. And she goes through this elaborate process of letting him down through the window and taking the household idol and putting it in the bed and disguising it as David. And when Saul sends for David the next day, she says, oh no, he's sick. And so Saul says, bring him to me on his bed. Well, when the guards go in to take him, they realize that's not David laying in the bed. That's an idol. It's a decoy. And it's given David enough time to flee and to run away. And from that point forward, it seems that David is being chased by Saul, hunted down like a dog, all throughout the land of Judah and all throughout the land of the Philistines and even into the wilderness. Saul is relentless in his pursuit. Every time he hears David may be over there, he takes an army over there to try to find him, to attack him, to kill him, to get rid of him. And yet what's interesting to me is when we look at David's attitude towards Saul throughout all of these negative experiences. There are two times that are recorded for us in the book of 1 Samuel where David had the opportunity to avenge himself on Saul, to get rid of his enemy. And yet he refused to do so. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 24. Let's look at the first time that this happened. We read beginning in verse 1, now when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. And Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepfolds on the way where there was a cave. And Saul went in to relieve himself. Saul says, we're in pursuit. Here's a cave here. I need to use the restroom, guys. So let's hold up a second. He goes into the cave by himself to take care of business, thinking that that's going to be a safe, quiet place where he can do that. But notice what we find out. David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of that cave. Saul, unintentionally, in pursuit of David, ended up going into the cave, the very cave where David and all of his mighty men are hiding, to go to the bathroom. Talk about being caught with your pants down. And the men said to David, behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I'm about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you. And David arose and cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. And it came about afterward that David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the edge of Saul's robe. So he said to his men, far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord, speaking of Saul, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him since he is the Lord's anointed. And David persuaded his men with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul. And Saul arose, left the cave and went on his way. And afterward, David arose and went out of the cave and called after Saul saying, my Lord and King. Notice how he addresses this guy who's hunting him down. And when Saul looked, behold, behind him, David bowed with his face to the ground and prostrated himself. David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men saying, behold, David seeks to harm you? Behold, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord had given you today into my hand in the cave, and some said to kill you, but my eye had pity on you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Now, my father, see the edge of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the edge of your robe and did not kill you. Know and perceive that there is no evil or rebellion in my hands, and I have not sinned against you. Though you are lying in wait for my life to take it. David says, I had a chance to kill you, Saul, but I didn't, because I wanted to prove to you that I had no ill will or evil intent against you, despite the fact that you are seeking me to kill me. I spared you. And again, a very similar thing happens in 1 Samuel chapter 26. Where this time the Ziphites have come to Saul at Gibeah saying, is not David hiding on the hill of Hakalah that is before Jeshimon? So Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having with him 3,000 chosen men of Israel to search for David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul camped in the hill of Hakalah, which is before Jeshimon, beside the road, and David was staying in the wilderness. And when he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness, David sent out spies, and he knew that Saul was definitely coming. David then arose and came to the place where Saul had camped. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army, and Saul was lying in the circle of the camp, and the people were camped around him. So David sends out spies. Is Saul really seeking after me? Spies come back. Yep, he's on his way. David goes out to look at where they're camped. It's nighttime, and he looks down, and he sees the camp of Saul, and he sees Saul in the middle of the camp sleeping there, and all of his 3,000 soldiers are encircled around him to protect the king. And David sneaks into the camp of Saul and walks right up to Saul. And in the ground next to Saul is that spear. You remember that spear that Saul has hurled at him numerous times? And a jug with some drink in it there next to him. And the guy that came with David says to him, David, this is your chance. This is your opportunity. Verse 8, Abishai said to David, today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now therefore, please let me strike him with the spear to the ground with one stroke. I'll not strike him a second time. He says, I'll make it quick. I'll make it painless. And David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? As the Lord lives, surely the Lord will strike him, or his day will come when he dies, or he'll go down into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. Now please take the spear that's in it at his head and the jug of water, and let's go. David says, Abishai, you're not going to kill him. I'm not going to allow you to do that. His day will come. God will make sure that justice is served. But it's not going to be by my hand. And so he says, take the spear, take the jug of water, and they go out of the camp. And when they're safe ways away, David hollers across to the camp to wake everybody up. And he basically calls out all of Saul's mighty men and says, you guys failed because somebody came into the camp tonight, could have killed the king that you're supposed to protect. And here's the proof. I've got his spear and I've got that jug that was set next to his head. But I didn't do it. I didn't take his life. Two times David could have avenged himself on Saul and gotten away with it scot-free. And yet two times he refuses to take his life. And it's interesting to me, when judgment from God finally comes against Saul and he is killed in battle with the Philistines, notice what happens when word of Saul's death is brought to David. First of all, let me back up and tell you that in the battle, Saul is wounded by the archers. And he turns to his armor bearer and he says, I need you to kill me because I don't want to fall into the hands of the Philistines. They'll make sport of me. And his armor bearer says, no, I can't do that. He's too scared. So Saul takes his own sword and falls on his own sword, killing himself. And when his armor bearer sees that, his armor bearer takes out his sword and falls on his sword and kills himself. So Saul died at his own hand, is what you need to know. But here, news is being brought to David about this. Notice first his response, beginning in verse 1 of 2 Samuel 1. It came about after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, that David returned 2 days in Ziklag. And on the third day, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes torn and dust on his head. And it came about when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. David said to him, from where do you come? He said, I've escaped from the camp of Israel. David said, how did things go? How did Israel do in its battle against the Philistines? Please tell me. He said, the people fled from the battle. Also, many of the people have fallen and are dead, and Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also. Now, I would imagine that this guy that's bringing this news to David thinks that he's bringing to David good news. Your enemy's dead. He's been annihilated in battle. And David's response is perhaps not quite what this man expected. David says, how do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead? And now this man fabricates a story where he becomes the hero, or at least he thinks he's going to become the hero in David's eyes, and that he come across Saul wounded in the battle and did the mercy kill on Saul. But notice David's response. David, then, verse 11, took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so also did all the men who were with him. They mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for his son Jonathan and for the people of the Lord and the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David said to the young man who told him, "Where are you from?" He answered, he said, "I am a son of an alien, an Amalekite." And David said to him, "How is it that you were not afraid to stretch out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" And David called one of the young men and said, "Go, cut him down." So he struck him down and died. And David said, "Your blood is on your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" David didn't take too kindly to this fabricated story about killing his enemy. He still seemed to care for Saul and respect him because he was the Lord's anointed. Now, we have other accounts of other enemies of David's. We referenced the Ziphites in chapter 6. They had betrayed David to Saul. They said, "Hey, Saul, David is over here. Come and find him." What's interesting was that's not the first time that they had betrayed David to Saul. In fact, they had a history of that. If you go back to 1 Samuel chapter 23, verses 19 through 20, the same group of people betray David to Saul on that occasion. That leads to the account of the cave there where David spared Saul's life. And that comes right on the heels of a prior betrayal of the people of Keilah. Which is interesting, if you go back to 1 Samuel chapter 23, David has just delivered this city from the oppression of the Philistines, and now he's living in the city, and Saul finds out that he's there, and Saul starts to send an army, and David inquires of the Lord, and he says, "Should I stay or should I go?" And God says, "You should go." And he says, "Well, if I stay, are the people of this town going to betray me? Are they going to surrender me over to Saul?" And God says, "Yeah, they're going to turn you over to him." And when David finds this out, verse 12, David said, "Will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul?" The Lord said, "They will surrender you." Verse 13, David said to his men, "About 600 arose and departed from Keilah. They went wherever they could go. When Saul was told David had escaped from Keilah, he gave up the pursuit." Just think about that for a second. You've got this mighty band of 600 warriors. You've just delivered this people from Philistine oppression, and now you find out that they're going to turn you over to your enemy. Well, there's a part of me that would say, no, you ain't going to do that. I've got the muscle here. I'm going to prevent you. Do you not remember what I just did for you? And yet that was not David's response. He just packs up and moves on. Not threatening, not trying to restrain them. He just gets out of there. We could talk about Ish-bosheth and Abner, but we're going to run out of time if we do all of this in detail. But Ish-bosheth was the son of Saul, who did not die in battle, and Abner, the commander of Saul's army, made Ish-bosheth king over half the nation of Israel. And there was an ensuing civil war as a result of this. The house of Saul was fighting against the house of David, and the war was great. But Ish-bosheth was not a good politician. And he accuses his main man, Abner, his commander of his armies, of treason. And Abner says, "If you're going to treat me that way, then I am going to go over and defect to David." What's interesting is when he defects to David, David receives him warmly. This guy who's been leading an insurrection, a civil war against him, he says, "Hey, you want to be on my side? I welcome you. Come in peace." Well, unfortunately, the commander of David's army, Joab, didn't like that. Because in a previous battle, Abner had killed one of Joab's brothers. So Joab takes his vengeance. He murders Abner in cold blood. And when David finds out, David is not happy. David tells Joab, basically, "God is going to punish you because you murdered this man in cold blood." And they have a funeral, and David helps to carry Abner's body in the funeral to show, and he's weeping and he's mourning. He wants everybody to know, even though Abner was my enemy, I had forgiven him. And I was not happy about him being murdered. And for that part, shortly after that, Ish-bosheth is murdered in his own home while he's taking a nap one afternoon by two fellows named Rechab and Baana. And they go and tell David, hey, they bring the head of Ish-bosheth and they say, "Hey, we took out your enemy. Today's a great day of rejoicing." And David's response is, you remember how I responded when somebody came and told me they had killed Saul? How do you think I'm going to treat you when you just murdered someone in cold blood? And he has both of those men struck down as a judgment against them. Then there's the rebellion of David's own son, Absalom, in 2 Samuel chapter 15 through 18. Absalom had, through cunning and deception, stolen away the heart of the people from his father David by basically getting people to come to him for judgment rather than going to the king. And he would say things, oh, it's so bad that the king won't actually listen to you or give an ear and audience to you. But don't worry, if I were your king, I would take care of you. And he orchestrates a coup in which David and his family has to flee from Jerusalem for safety. And Absalom comes into the city, and to solidify his place as the new king, he takes all of the concubines of his father David that he had left behind, and he pitches a tent on a high hill, and he goes in and he defiles them in broad daylight in front of the eyes of all of the people. And he is seeking to go to war against his father, to strike him down, to kill him, to annihilate him, to utterly wipe out anybody who is still for his father David. What's interesting to me is the way that David responds. When the battle is getting ready to ensue, he gives specific instructions to his men, to his commanders. In 2 Samuel chapter 18 and in verse 5, the king charged Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. I know he's done all these terrible things, but when you come across him in battle, please don't kill him. Deal gently with him. Well, Joab, again, does not agree with his king. And when he finds Absalom stranded in a tree because his beautiful, luscious hair had gotten stuck in the branches and his donkey ran away from him, Joab comes up to him and shoves three spears through his heart and has him killed. And notice David's response when he hears this word. Verse 33, the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. Thus he said as he walked, oh, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son. This little brat who betrayed him, threatened his life, David says, I wish it would have been me that had died instead of you. On that same occasion, there is a man named Shimei, the son of Gera, the house of Saul, as David is fleeing from the presence of Absalom. And as he's running away from the city of Jerusalem, Shimei curses David. Says, you're getting what you deserve. Just what you did to the house of Saul, now your son's doing to you. And Abishai, David's servant, says, David, you want me to go take care of that problem? You want me to shut him up? He shouldn't be cursing you like that. And David says, you know, leave him alone. He might be right in what he's saying. If it's from the Lord, then I deserve it. And if not, God will take care of it. And what's interesting is when David comes back after defeating Absalom, the Shimei comes to him and says, I'm so sorry for what I did. And Abishai says, you want me to kill him now? And David says, no, you're not going to kill him. I'm going to forgive him. And that's the end of it. What I'm seeing here in David, though, are these godly attitudes that we read about us as children of God that we're supposed to have. For example, there's this principle that Paul lays down in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and verse 14, Paul says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. In verse 17, he goes on and says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you'll heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's what I see in David and his interaction with his enemies and his attitude and his behavior towards those who are mistreating him. Instead of cursing in return, he returns a blessing instead of a curse. Instead of returning evil for evil, he overcomes evil with good. I think about what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. Verses 43 through 48. Jesus says, you heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies. And pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not the Gentiles even do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. I see that demonstrated in the life of David as well. A man who didn't hold a grudge against his enemies. A man who loved them and wanted what was best for them. Always honoring the judgment of God. You know, there's a statement in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5 describing love. It's one of the attributes of love is that it keeps no account of a wrong suffered. It doesn't keep a ledger and keep a list of all the things that you've done against me and all of the harm that you've caused me and all of the times that you've mistreated me so that I can, say, keep track of that and make sure that I get repayment for it. That's not what love does. And certainly that was not what David did either. He was willing to forgive. He was willing to let go of harm that had been done to him. We think to ourselves, how was David able to do this? How was David able to maintain this kind of an attitude towards his enemies? Well, I think when we begin to look at some of his psalms, we're given a behind-the-curtain look at the mind of David and his thought process. You know, it's interesting to me, a lot of the psalms, not only are we told who wrote the psalm, but we're told the occasion when he wrote that psalm. So, for example, Psalm 3, David wrote this when he was fleeing from his son Absalom. Notice what he says. O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield to me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people. When David was being pursued by Absalom, what did he do? When everybody was saying, there's no hope, there's no chance, God's abandoned you, David said, no, I'm going to put my trust in God to deliver me and bring salvation. In Psalm 54, when the Ziphites betrayed David, notice what he says there. Save me, O my God, by your name, and vindicate me by your power. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth, for strangers have risen against me, and violent men have sought my life. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the sustainer of my soul. He will recompense the evil of my foes. Destroy them in your faithfulness. Willingly I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from all trouble, and my eye has looked with satisfaction upon my enemies. Again, David put his trust in God, knowing that God would carry out the proper judgment against those who treated him so wickedly. And instead of turning to God and being upset with God, David says, I'm going to praise you. I'm going to honor you. In Psalm 63, when David is wandering through the wilderness, probably being pursued and chased down by Saul under threat of his life, he's a wanted man. He says this, O God, you are my God. I shall seek you earnestly. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh yearns for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. Thus I have seen you in your sanctuary to see your power and your glory. Because your loving kindness is better than lives, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul is satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth offers praises with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, for you have been my help. And in the shadow of your wings, I sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek my life to destroy it will go into the depths of the earth. They'll be delivered over to the power of the sword. They will be a prey for foxes. But the king will rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him will glory, for the mouths of those who speak lies will be stopped. Things were not going good for David right now. And yet he says, I'm going to turn to the Lord. I'm going to seek him. I'm going to meditate on him. I'm going to praise him, trusting him to deliver. In Psalm 57, this is a psalm of David. Note, when he fled from Saul in the cave, probably the cave where he cut off the edge of Saul's garment. David says, be gracious to me, O God, be gracious to me, for my soul takes refuge in you. And in the shadow of your wings, I'll take refuge until the destruction passes by. I'll cry to God Most High, to God who accomplishes all things for me. He'll send from heaven and save me. He reproaches him who tramples upon me. God will send forth his loving kindness and his truth. My soul is among lions. I must lie among those who breathe forth fire, even the sons of men whose teeth are spears and arrows. Spears and arrows. Their tongue is a sharp sword. Be exalted above the heavens, O God. Let your glory be above all the earth. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bound down. They dug a pit before me. They themselves have fallen into the midst of it. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing. Yes, I will sing praises. Awake, my glory. Awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations. For your loving kindness is great to the heavens. And your truth to the clouds, be exalted above the heavens, O God. Let your glory be above all the earth. We could go on and read Psalm 59 that David wrote when that ambush had been set at his house by his father-in-law to take his life. But you're going to see the same kind of themes as you go through the Psalms of David. David is constantly putting his trust in God. When he's suffering, he's petitioning God, watch over me, protect me, guide me, direct me. And then he's patiently waiting on the Lord to bring about his deliverance and his salvation, all the while praising his God. How did David maintain that attitude? By constantly looking to his king. David understood the principle that Peter talks about in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 18 through 20, that when we bear up when suffering unjustly, that finds favor with God. God looks favorably upon us, and he will not forget about us. David understood James' admonition in James chapter 5. To those who were suffering and being mistreated in his day, he says, therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and the late rains. You too be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We count those blessed who endured. You've heard of the endurance of Job, have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. And indeed, I think I could say the same thing about, you know of the experience of David. You've seen the outcome of that, that the Lord is indeed compassionate and merciful. We can look to these men and women of the Old Testament who've walked this path before us, who've endured, and we can gain strength from them, imitating their example. And so I would suggest to you this morning in closing that we would do well to imitate David, this man of God. That we should put our trust in the Lord, waiting on Him to execute judgment against our enemies, knowing that God will always do the right thing. Knowing and trusting that when we bear up under unjust suffering, God will look with favor upon us. We will be pleasing to Him, and He will help us to make it through that difficulty. And in this way, we will be able to demonstrate towards those who act as our enemies the same attitude that David demonstrated towards his enemies. We will be able to actually love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. We will be able to return a blessing instead of a curse. We will be able to overcome evil with good. We'll be able to let go of the wrongs that we have suffered unfairly and unjustly at the hands of those who are our enemies. And perhaps if we would do that, we too, just as David was a man after God's own heart, we too might be a people after God's own heart.